Immediately, everyone, young and old, surrounded Semyon Ivanovich, standing in a row round his bed and fastening eyes full of expectation on the invalid. Meantime, he had come to himself, but from shame or some other feeling, began pulling up the quilt over him, apparently wishing to hide himself under it from the attention of his sympathetic friends. At last, Mark Ivanovich was the first to break silence, and, as a sensible man, he began saying in a very friendly way that Semyon Ivanovich must keep calm, that it was too bad and a shame to be ill, that only little children behaved like that, that he must get well and go to the office. Mark Ivanovich ended by a little joke, saying that no regular salary had yet been fixed for invalids, and, as he knew for a fact that their grade would be very low in the service, to his thinking anyway, their calling or condition did not promise great and substantial advantages. In fact, it was evident that they were all taking genuine interest in Semyon Ivanovich's fate and were very sympathetic. But with incomprehensible rudeness, Semyon Ivanovich persisted in lying in bed in silence and obstinately pulling the quilt higher and higher over his head. Mark Ivanovich, however, would not be gainsaid, and, restraining his feelings, said something very honeyed to Semyon Ivanovich again, knowing that that was how he ought to treat a sick man. But Semyon Ivanovich would not feel this. On the contrary, he muttered something between his teeth with the most distrustful air, and suddenly began glancing askance from right to left in a hostile way, as though he would have reduced his sympathetic friends to ashes with his eyes. It was no use letting it stop there. Mark Ivanovich lost patience, and seeing that the man was offended and completely exasperated, and had simply made up his mind to be obstinate, told him straight out, without any softening suavity, that it was time to get up, that it was no use lying there, that shouting day and night about houses on fire, sisters-in-law, drunken cadgers, locks, boxes, and goodness knows what was all stupid, improper, and degrading. For if Semyon Ivanovich did not want to sleep himself, he should not hinder other people, and please would he bear it in mind. This speech produced its effects, for Semyon Ivanovich, turning promptly to the orator, articulated firmly, though in a hoarse voice,
"You hold your tongue, puppy, you idle speaker, you foul-mouthed man. Do you hear, young dandy? Are you a prince, eh? Do you understand what I say?"
Hearing such insults, Mark Ivanovich fired up, but realizing that he had to deal with a sick man, magnanimously overcame his resentment and tried to shame him out of his humour, but was cut short in that too. For Semyon Ivanovich observed at once that he would not allow people to play with him for all that Mark Ivanovich wrote poetry. Then followed a silence of 2 minutes. At last, recovering from his amazement, Mark Ivanovich, plainly, clearly, in well-chosen language, but with firmness, declared that Semyon Ivanovich ought to understand that he was among gentlemen, and,
"You ought to understand, sir, how to behave with gentlemen."
Mark Ivanovich could on occasion speak effectively, and liked to impress his hearers, but probably from the habit of years of silence, Semyon Ivanovich talked and acted somewhat abruptly, and, moreover, when he did on occasion begin a long sentence, as he got further into it, every word seemed to lead to another word, that other word to a third word, that third to a fourth, and so on, so that his mouth seemed brimming over. He began stuttering, and the crowding words took to flying out in picturesque disorder. That was why Semyon Ivanovich, who was a sensible man, sometimes talked terrible nonsense.
"You are lying," he said now. "You booby, you loose fellow. You'll come to want, you'll go begging, you seditious fellow, you loafer. Take that, you poet."
"Why, you are still raving, aren't you, Semyon Ivanovich?"
"I tell you what," answered Semyon Ivanovich, Fools rave, drunkards rave, dogs rave, but a wise man acts sensibly. I tell you, you don't know your own business, you loafer, you educated gentleman, you learned book. Here, you'll get on fire and not notice your head's burning off. What do you think of that?
Why, you mean... How do you mean, burn my head off, Semyon Ivanovitch? Mark Ivanovitch said no more, for everyone saw clearly that Semyon Ivanovitch was not yet in his sober senses, but delirious. But the landlady could not resist remarking at this point that the house in Crooked Lane had been burnt owing to a bald wench, that there was a bald-headed wench living there, that she had lighted a candle and set fire to the lumber room, but nothing would happen in her place, and everything would be all right in the flats.
"But look here, Semyon Ivanovitch," cried Zinovy Prokofievitch, losing patience and interrupting the landlady. "You old fogey! You old crock! You silly fellow! Are they making jokes with you now about your sister-in-law or examinations in dancing? Is that it? Is that what you think?" "Now I tell you what," answered our hero, sitting up in bed and making a last effort in a paroxysm of fury with his sympathetic friends. "Who's the fool? You are the fool. A dog is a fool, you joking gentleman. But I am not going to make jokes to please you, sir. Do you hear, puppy? I am not your servant, sir."
Semyon Ivanovitch would have said something more, but he fell back in bed, helpless. His sympathetic friends were left gaping in perplexity, for they understood now what was wrong with Semyon Ivanovitch and did not know how to begin. Suddenly the kitchen door creaked and opened, and the drunken cadger, alias Mr. Zimovakin, timidly thrust in his head, cautiously sniffing around the place, as his habit was. It seemed as though he had been expected. Everyone waved to him at once to come quickly, and Zimovakin, highly delighted, with the utmost readiness and haste, jostled his way to Semyon Ivanovitch's bedside. It was evident that Zimovakin had spent the whole night in vigil and in great exertions of some sort. The right side of his face was plastered up, his swollen eyelids were wet from his running eyes, his coat and all his clothes were torn, while the whole left side of his attire was bespattered with something extremely nasty, possibly mud from a puddle. Under his arm was somebody's violin, which he had been taking somewhere to sell. Apparently they had not made a mistake in summoning him to their assistance, for seeing the position of affairs, he addressed the delinquent at once, and, with the air of a man who knows what he is about and feels that he has the upper hand, said, "What are you thinking about? Get up, Senka. What are you doing, clever chap like you? Be sensible, or I shall pull you out of bed if you're obstreperous. Don't be obstreperous." This brief but forcible speech surprised them all. Still more were they surprised when they noticed that Semyon Ivanovitch, hearing all this and seeing this person before him, was so flustered and reduced to such confusion and dismay that he could scarcely mutter through his teeth in a whisper the inevitable protest.
"Go away, you wretch," he said. "You are a wretched creature. You are a thief. You hear? Do you understand? You are a great swell, my fine gentleman, you regular swell." "No, my boy," Zimovakin answered emphatically, retaining all his presence of mind. "You're wrong there, you wise fellow, you regular Prohachin," Zimovakin went on, parodying Semyon Ivanovitch and looking round gleefully. "Don't be obstreperous. Behave yourself, Senka. Behave yourself, or I'll give you away. I'll tell them all about it, my lad. Do you understand?" Apparently Semyon Ivanovitch did understand, for he started when he heard the conclusion of the speech and began looking rapidly about him with an utterly desperate air. Satisfied with the effect, Mr. Zimovakin would have continued, but Mark Ivanovitch checked his zeal, and waiting till Semyon Ivanovitch was still and almost calm again, began judiciously impressing on the uneasy invalid at great length that,
To harbour ideas such as he now had in his head was, first, useless, and secondly, not only useless but harmful, and in fact not so much harmful as positively immoral. And the cause of it all was that Semyon Ivanovitch was not only a bad example, but led them all into temptation. Everyone expected satisfactory results from this speech. Moreover, by now Semyon Ivanovitch was quite quiet and replied in measured terms. A quiet discussion followed. They appealed to him in a friendly way, inquiring what he was so frightened of. Semyon Ivanovitch answered, but his answers were irrelevant. They answered him, he answered them. There were one or two more observations on both sides, and then everyone rushed into discussion, for suddenly such a strange and amazing subject cropped up that they did not know how to express themselves. The argument at last led to impatience. Impatience led to shouting, and shouting even to tears. And Mark Ivanovitch went away at last, foaming at the mouth, and declaring that he had never known such a blockhead. Oplevaniev spat in disgust. Okyanov was frightened. Zinovy Prokofievich became tearful, while Ustinya Fyodorovna positively howled, wailing that her lodger was leaving them and had gone off his head, that he would die, poor dear man, without a passport and without telling anyone, while she was a lone, lorn woman, and that she would be dragged from pillar to post. In fact, they all saw clearly at last that the seed they had sown had yielded a hundredfold, that the soil had been too productive, and that, in their company, Semyon Ivanovitch had succeeded in overstraining his wits completely and in the most irrevocable manner. Everyone subsided into silence, for though they saw that Semyon Ivanovitch was frightened, the sympathetic friends were frightened too. "What?" cried Mark Ivanovitch. "But what are you afraid of? What have you gone off your head about? Who's thinking about you, my good sir? Have you the right to be afraid? Who are you? What are you? Nothing, sir. A round naught, sir, that is what you are. What are you making a fuss about? A woman has been run over in the street. So are you going to be run over? Some drunkard did not take care of his pocket, but is that any reason why your coat-tails should be cut off? A house is burnt down, so your head is to be burnt off, is it? Is that it, sir? Is that it?"
"You stupid," muttered Semyon Ivanovitch. "If your nose were cut off, you would eat it up with a bit of bread and not notice it."
"I may be a dandy," shouted Mark Ivanovitch, not listening. "I may be a regular dandy, but I have not to pass an examination to get married, to learn dancing. The ground is firm under me, sir." "Why, my good man, haven't you room enough? Is the floor giving way under your feet, or what?"
"Well, they won't ask me, will they? They'll shut up, and that will be the end of it."
"The end of it? That's what's up. What's your idea now, eh?"
"Why, they kicked out the drunken cadger."
"Yes, but you see, that was a drunkard, and you were a man, and so am I."
"Yes, I am a man. It's there all right one day, and then it's gone."
"Gone? But what do you mean by it?"
"Why, the office. The office."
"Yes, you blessed man. But of course the office is wanted and necessary."
"It is wanted, I tell you. It's wanted today and it's wanted tomorrow, but the day after tomorrow it will not be wanted. You have heard what happened?"
"Why, but they'll pay you your salary for the year, you doubting Thomas, you man of little faith. They'll put you into another job on account of your age."
"Salary? But what if I've spent my salary? If thieves come and take my money? And I have a sister-in-law. Do you hear? A sister-in-law, you battering ram."
"A sister-in-law? You are a man?"
"Yes, I am. I am a man. But you are a well-read gentleman and a fool. Do you hear, you battering ram? You regular battering ram, that's what you are. I am not talking about your jokes, but there are jobs such that all of a sudden they are done away with. And Dmit, do you hear? Dmit Vasilievich says that the post will be done away with.
Ah, bless you with your Dmit. You sinner, why, you know in a twinkling of an eye you'll be left without a post. Then you'll just have to make the best of it.
Why, you are simply raving, or clean off your head. Tell us plainly, what have you done? Own up if you have done something wrong. It's no use being ashamed. Are you off your head, my good man, eh?
He's off his head! He's off his head! They all cried, and wrung their hands in despair, while the landlady threw both her arms round Mark Ivanovitch, for fear he should tear Semyon Ivanovitch to pieces.
"'You heathen! You heathenish soul! You wise man!' Zimovakin besought him. "'Senka! You are not a man to take offence. You are a polite, prepossessing man. You are simple. You are good. Do you hear? It all comes from your goodness. Here I am, a ruffian and a fool. I am a beggar. But good people haven't abandoned me. No fear. You see, they treat me with respect.' I thank them and the landlady. Here, you see, I bow down to the ground to them. Here, see, see, I'm paying what is due to you, landlady.
At this point, Zimovakin swung off with pedantic dignity, a low bow right down to the ground. After that, Semyon Ivanovitch would have gone on talking, but this time they would not let him. They all intervened, began entreating him, assuring him, comforting him, and succeeded in making Semyon Ivanovitch thoroughly ashamed of himself, and at last, in a faint voice, he asked leave to explain himself.
"'Very well, then,' he said. "'I am prepossessing. I am quiet. I am good, faithful, and devoted. To the last drop of my blood, you know. Do you hear, you puppy? You swell?' Granted, the job is going on, but you see I am poor. And what if they take it? Do you hear, you swell? Hold your tongue and try to understand. They'll take it, and that's all about it. It's going on, brother, and they're not going on. Do you understand? And I shall go begging my bread. Do you hear?
Senka!
Zimovakin bawled frantically, drowning the general hubbub with his voice.
"'You are seditious. I'll inform against you. What are you saying? Who are you? Are you a rebel, you sheep's head? A rowdy, stupid man they would turn off without a character. But what are you?'
"'Well, that's just it.'
"'What?
Well, there it is.
How do you mean?
Why, I'm free. He's free. And here one lies and thinks,
"'What?
What if they say I'm seditious?'
"'Seditious? Senka, you seditious?'
"'Stay!' cried Mr. Prohachin, waving his hand and interrupting the rising uproar. "'That's not what I mean. Try to understand. Only try to understand, you sheep. I am law-abiding. I am law-abiding today. I am law-abiding tomorrow. And then all of a sudden they kick me out and call me seditious.'
"'What are you saying?' Mark Ivanovitch thundered at last, jumping up from the chair on which he had sat down to rest, running up to the bed, and in a frenzy, shaking with vexation and fury.
"'What do you mean, you sheep? You have nothing to call your own. Why, are you the only person in the world? Was the world made for you, do you suppose? Are you a Napoleon? What are you? Who are you? Are you a Napoleon, eh? Tell me, are you a Napoleon?'
But Mr. Prohachin did not answer this question, not because he was overcome with shame at being a Napoleon and was afraid of taking upon himself such a responsibility. No, he was incapable of disputing further or saying anything. His illness had reached a crisis. Tiny teardrops gushed suddenly from his glittering, feverish grey eyes. He hid his burning head in his bony hands that were wasted by illness, sat up in bed, and, sobbing, began to say that he was quite poor, that he was a simple, unlucky man, that he was foolish and unlearned. He begged kind folks to forgive him,
to take care of him, to protect him, to give him food and drink, not to leave him in want and goodness knows what else, Semyon Ivanovitch said. As he uttered this appeal, he looked about him in wild terror, as though he were expecting the ceiling to fall or the floor to give way. Everyone felt his heart soften and move to pity as he looked at the poor fellow. The landlady, sobbing and wailing like a peasant woman at her forlorn condition, laid the invalid back in bed with her own hands. Mark Ivanovitch, seeing the uselessness of touching upon the memory of Napoleon, instantly relapsed into kindliness and came to her assistance. The others, in order to do something, suggested raspberry tea, saying that it always did good at once, and that the invalid would like it very much. But Zimoveykin contradicted them all, saying there was nothing better than a good dose of chamomile or something of the sort. As for Zinovy Prokofievitch, having a good heart, he sobbed and shed tears in his remorse for having frightened Semyon Ivanovitch with all sorts of absurdities, and gathering from the invalid's last words that he was quite poor and needing assistance, he proceeded to get up a subscription for him, confining it for a time to the tenants of the flat. Everyone was sighing and moaning. Everyone felt sorry and grieved, yet all wondered how it was a man could be so completely panic-stricken, and what was he frightened about. It would have been all very well if he had had a good post, had had a wife, a lot of children. It would have been excusable if he were being hauled up before the court on some charge or other. But he was a man utterly insignificant, with nothing but a trunk and a German lock. He had been lying more than 20 years behind his screen, saying nothing, knowing nothing of the world, nor of trouble, saving his half-pence, and now at a frivolous, idle word, the man had actually gone off his head, was utterly panic-stricken at the thought he might have a hard time of it, and it never occurred to him that everyone has a hard time of it. "If he would only take that into consideration," Okyanov said afterwards, "that we all have a hard time, then the man would have kept his head, would have given up his antics, and would have put up with things, one way or another." All day long, nothing was talked of but Semyon Ivanovitch. They went up to him, inquired after him, tried to comfort him. But by the evening he was beyond that. The poor fellow began to be delirious, feverish. He sank into unconsciousness, so that they almost thought of sending for a doctor. The lodgers all agreed together and undertook to watch over Semyon Ivanovitch and soothe him by turns through the night, and if anything happened, to wake all the rest immediately. With the object of keeping awake, they sat down to cards, setting beside the invalid his friend, the drunken cadger, who had spent the whole day in the flat and had asked leave to stay the night. As the game was played on credit and was not at all interesting, they soon got bored. They gave up the game, then got into an argument about something, then began to be loud and noisy, finally dispersed to their various corners, went on for a long time angrily shouting and wrangling, and as all of them felt suddenly ill-humoured, they no longer cared to sit up, so went to sleep. Soon it was as still in the flat as in an empty cellar, and it was the more like one because it was horribly cold. The last to fall asleep was Okyanov. "And it was between sleeping and waking," as he said afterwards, "I fancied, just before morning, two men kept talking close by me." Okyanov said that he recognized Zimoveykin, and that Zimoveykin began waking his old friend, Remnev, just beside him, that they talked for a long time in a whisper, then Zimoveykin went away and could be heard trying to unlock the door into the kitchen. The key, the landlady declared afterwards, was lying under her pillow and was lost that night. Finally, Okyanov testified, he had fancied he had heard them go behind the screen to the invalid and light a candle there. "And I know nothing more," he said. I fell asleep and woke up, as everyone else did, when everyone in the flat jumped out of bed at the sound behind the screen of a shriek that would have roused the dead, and it seemed to many of them that a candle went out at that moment. A great hubbub arose. Everyone's heart stood still. They rushed pell-mell at the shriek, but at that moment there was a scuffle, with shouting, swearing, and fighting. They struck a light and saw that Zimovekin and Ramnyov were fighting together, that they were swearing and abusing one another, and as they turned the light on them, one of them shouted, "It's not me, it's this ruffian!" And the other, who was Zimovekin, was shouting, "Don't touch me! I've done nothing! I'll take my oath any minute!" Both of them looked hardly like human beings, but for the first minute they had no attention to spare for them. The invalid was not where he had been behind the screen. They immediately parted the combatants and dragged them away and saw that Mr. Prokhartchin was lying under the bed. He must, while completely unconscious, have dragged the quilt and pillow after him, so that there was nothing left on the bedstead but the bare mattress, old and greasy. He never had sheets. They pulled Semyon Ivanovich out, stretched him on the mattress, but soon realized that there was no need to make trouble over him, that he was completely done for. His arms were stiff, and he seemed all to pieces. They stood over him. He still faintly shuddered and trembled all over, made an effort to do something with his arms, could not utter a word, but blinked his eyes, as they say heads do when still warm and bleeding, after being just chopped off by the executioner. At last, the body grew more and more still. The last faint convulsions died away. Mr. Prokhartchin had set off with his good deeds and his sins. Whether Semyon Ivanovich had been frightened by something, whether he had had a dream, as Remnev maintained afterwards, or there had been some other mischief, nobody knew. All that can be said is that if the head clerk had made his appearance at that moment in the flat and had announced that Semyon Ivanovich was dismissed for sedition, insubordination, and drunkenness, if some old draggle-tailed beggar-woman had come in at the door, calling herself Semyon Ivanovich's sister-in-law, or if Semyon Ivanovich had just received 200 rubles as a reward, or if the house had caught fire and Semyon Ivanovich's head had been really burning, he would, in all probability, not have deigned to stir a finger in any of these eventualities. While the first stupefaction was passing over, while all present were regaining their powers of speech, were working themselves up into a fever of excitement, shouting and flying to conjectures and suppositions, while Ustinya Fyodorovna was pulling the box from under his bed, was rummaging in a fluster under the mattress and even in Semyon Ivanovich's boots, while they cross-questioned Ramnyev and Zimovekin, Okeanov, who had been hitherto the quietest, humblest, and least original of the lodgers, suddenly plucked up all his presence of mind and displayed all his latent talents by taking up his hat and, under cover of the general uproar, slipping out of the flat. And just when the horrors of disorder and anarchy had reached their height in the agitated flat, till then so tranquil, the door opened, and suddenly there descended upon them, like snow upon their heads, a personage of gentlemanly appearance, with a severe and displeased-looking face. Behind him, Yaroslav Ilyich. Behind Yaroslav Ilyich, his subordinates and the functionaries whose duty it is to be present on such occasions. And behind them all, much embarrassed, Mr. Okeanov. The severe-looking personage of gentlemanly appearance went straight up to Semyon Ivanovich, examined him, made a wry face, shrugged his shoulders, and announced what everybody knew, that is, that the dead man was dead, only adding that the same thing had happened a day or two ago to a gentleman of consequence, highly respected, who had died suddenly in his sleep. Then the personage of gentlemanly but displeased-looking appearance walked away, saying that they had troubled him for nothing, and took himself off. His place was at once filled, while Rumnyev and Zimovakin were handed over to the custody of the proper functionaries by Yaroslav Ilyich, who questioned someone, adroitly took possession of the box which the landlady was already trying to open, put the boots back in their proper place, observing that they were all in holes and no use, asked for the pillow to be put back, called up Okaniev, asked for the key of the box which was found in the pocket of the drunken cadger, and solemnly, in the presence of the proper officials, unlocked Semyon Ivanovitch's property. Everything was displayed. 2 rags, a pair of socks, 1/2 handkerchief, an old hat, 7 buttons, some old soles, and the uppers of a pair of boots. That is, all sorts of odds and ends, scraps, rubbish, trash, which had a stale smell. The only thing of any value was the German lock. They called up Okyanov and cross-questioned him sternly, but Okyanov was ready to take his oath. They asked for the pillow. They examined it. It was extremely dirty, but in other respects it was like all other pillows. They attacked the mattress. They were about to lift it up, but stopped for a moment's consideration, when suddenly, and quite unexpectedly, something heavy fell with a clink on the floor. They bent down and saw on the floor a screw of paper, and in the screw some 12 rubles.
"Ahey!" said Yaroslav Ilyich, pointing to a slit in the mattress from which hair and stuffing were sticking out.
They examined the slit, and found that it had only just been made with a knife and was 1/2 yard in length. They thrust hands into the gap and pulled out a kitchen knife, probably hurriedly thrust in there after slitting the mattress. Before Yaroslav Ilyich had time to pull the knife out of the slit and to say, "Ahey!" again, another screw of money fell out, and after it, one at a time, 2 half-rubles, 1/4 ruble, then some change, and an old-fashioned, solid 5-kopeck piece. All this was seized upon. At this point, it was realized that it would not be amiss to cut up the whole mattress with scissors. They asked for scissors. Meanwhile, the guttering candle lighted up a scene that would have been extremely curious to a spectator. About 12 lodgers were grouped round the bed in the most picturesque costumes, all unbrushed, unshaven, unwashed, sleepy-looking, just as they had gone to bed. Some were quite pale, while others had drops of sweat upon their brows. Some were shuddering, while others looked feverish. The landlady, utterly stupefied, was standing quietly with her hands folded, waiting for Yaroslav Ilyich's good pleasure. From the stove above, the heads of Avdotya, the servant, and the landlady's favourite cat looked down with frightened curiosity. The torn and broken screen lay cast on the floor. The open box displayed its uninviting contents. The quilt and pillow lay tossed at random, covered with fluff from the mattress, and on the 3-legged wooden table gleamed the steadily growing heap of silver and other coins. Only Semyon Ivanovitch preserved his composure, lying on the bed and seeming to have no foreboding of his ruin. When the scissors had been brought, and Yaroslav Ilyich's assistant, wishing to be of service, shook the mattress rather impatiently to ease it from under the back of its owner, Semyon Ivanovitch, with his habitual civility, made room a little, rolling on his side with his back to the searchers. Then, at a second shake, he turned on his face, finally gave way still further, and, as the last slat in the bedstead was missing, he suddenly and quite unexpectedly plunged head downward, leaving in view only 2 bony, thin blue legs, which stuck upwards like 2 branches of a charred tree. As this was the second time that morning that Mr. Prokhachin had poked his head under his bed, it at once aroused suspicion, and some of the lodgers, headed by Zinovy Prokofievich, crept under it, with the intention of seeing whether there was something hidden there, too. But they knocked their heads together for nothing, and as Yaroslav Ilyich shouted to them, bidding them release Semyon Ivanovich at once from his unpleasant position, two of the more sensible seized each a leg, dragged the unsuspected capitalist into the light of day, and laid him across the bed. Meanwhile, the hare and flock were flying about, the heap of silver grew, and, my goodness, what a lot there was! Noble silver rubles, stout, solid ruble-and-a-half pieces, pretty half-ruble coins, plebeian quarter-rubles, 20 kopeck pieces, even the unpromising old crone's small fry of 10 and 5 kopeck silver pieces, all done up in separate bits of paper in the most methodical and systematic way. There were curiosities also, two counters of some sort, one Napoleon d'or, one very rare coin of some unknown kind. Some of the rubles were of the greatest antiquity. They were rubbed and hacked, coins of Elizabeth, German kreutzers, coins of Peter, of Catherine. There were, for instance, old 15 kopeck pieces, now very rare, pierced for wearing as earrings, all much worn, yet with the requisite number of dots. There was even copper, but all of that was green and tarnished. They found one red note, but no more. At last, when the dissection was quite over and the mattress case had been shaken more than once without a clink, they piled all the money on the table and set to work to count it. At the first glance, one might well have been deceived and estimated it at a million. It was such an immense heap. But it was not a million, though it did turn out to be a very considerable sum. Exactly 2,497 rubles and a half. So that if Zinovy Prokofievich's subscription had been raised the day before, there would perhaps have been just 2,500 rubles. They took the money. They put a seal on the dead man's box. They listened to the landlady's complaints, and informed her when and where she ought to lodge information in regard to the dead man's little debt to her. A receipt was taken from the proper person. At that point, hints were dropped in regard to the sister-in-law, but being persuaded that in a certain sense the sister-in-law was a myth, that is, a product of the defective imagination with which they had more than once reproached Semyon Ivanovich, they abandoned the idea as useless, mischievous, and disadvantageous to the good name of Mr. Prokhartchin, and so the matter ended. When the first shock was over, when the lodgers had recovered themselves and realized the sort of person their late companion had been, they all subsided, relapsed into silence, and began looking distrustfully at one another. Some seemed to take Semyon Ivanovich's behaviour very much to heart, and even to feel affronted by it. What a fortune! So the man had saved up like this. Not losing his composure, Mark Ivanovich proceeded to explain why Semyon Ivanovich had been so suddenly panic-stricken, but they did not listen to him. Zinovy Prokofievich was very thoughtful. Okyanov had had a little to drink. The others seemed rather crestfallen, while a little man called Kantarev, with a nose like a sparrow's beak, left the flat that evening after very carefully packing up and cording all his boxes and bags, and coldly explaining to the curious that times were hard, and that the terms here were beyond his means. The landlady wailed without ceasing, lamenting for Semyon Ivanovich, and cursing him for having taken advantage of her lone, lorn state. Mark Ivanovich was asked why the dead man had not taken his money to the bank. "He was too simple, my good soul. He hadn't enough imagination," answered Mark Ivanovich. "Yes, and you have been too simple too, my good woman," Okyanov put in. "For 20 years the man kept himself close here in your flat, and here he's been knocked down by a feather, while you went on cooking cabbage soup and had no time to notice it. Ah, my good woman." "Oh, the poor dear," the landlady went on. "What need of a bank? If he'd brought his pile and said to me,
Take it, Ustinyushka, poor dear. Here is all I have. Keep and board me in my helplessness so long as I am on earth. Then by the holy icon I would have fed him. I would have given him drink. I would have looked after him. Ah, the sinner! Ah, the deceiver! He deceived me. He cheated me, a poor lone woman.
They went up to the bed again. Semyon Ivanovitch was lying properly now, dressed in his best, though indeed it was his only suit, hiding his rigid chin behind a cravat which was tied rather awkwardly, washed, brushed, but not quite shaven, because there was no razor in the flat. The only one which had belonged to Zinovy Prokofievitch had lost its edge a year ago, and had been very profitably sold at Tolkutchy Market. The others used to go to the barber's. They had not yet had time to clear up the disorder. The broken screen lay as before, and exposing Semyon Ivanovitch's seclusion seemed like an emblem of the fact that death tears away the veil from all our secrets, our shifty dodges and intrigues. The stuffing from the mattress lay about in heaps. The whole room, suddenly so still, might well have been compared by a poet to the ruined nest of a swallow, broken down and torn to pieces by the storm, the nestlings and their mother killed, and their warm little bed of fluff, feather, and flock scattered about them. Semyon Ivanovitch, however, looked more like a conceited, thievish old cock-sparrow. He kept quite quiet now, seemed to be lying low, as though he were not guilty, as though he had had nothing to do with the shameless consciousnessness and unseemingly duping and deception of all these good people. He did not heed now the sobs and wailing of his bereaved and wounded landlady. On the contrary, like a wary, callous capitalist, anxious not to waste a minute in idleness even in the coffin, he seemed to be wrapped up in some speculative calculation. There was a look of deep reflection in his face, while his lips were drawn together with a significant air, of which Semyon Ivanovitch, during his lifetime, had not been suspected of being capable. He seemed, as it were, to have grown shrewder. His right eye was, as it were, slyly screwed up. Semyon Ivanovitch seemed wanting to say something, to make some very important communication and explanation and without loss of time, because things were complicated and there was not a minute to lose. And it seemed as though they could hear him.
"What is it? Give over, do you hear, you stupid woman? Don't whine. Go to bed and sleep it off, my good woman, do you hear? I am dead. There's no need of a fuss now. What's the use of it, really? It's nice to lie here, though I don't mean that, do you hear? You are a fine lady. You are a regular fine lady. Understand that. Here I am dead now. But look here. What if, that is, perhaps it can't be so, but I say, what if I'm not dead? What if I get up? Do you hear? What would happen then?"